Well, good day and welcome to another episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and actually up here on stage for a change. I have been working this event and trying to get the editing and the live stream going, and we've been working hard at getting that done. And finally, I get to do a MedicCast episode. So I want to thank everybody for following the stream and keeping up with us here. And I also want to thank Ron Davis from Confessions of an EMS Newbie. Ron is a just big help here by taking over the editing duties and giving me a chance to walk around and actually participate in the event. So we're going to go ahead and move forward here. I do want to say we're at EMS World Expo 2011 in Las Vegas. And I tell you, I say this all the time, if you haven't been to one of these major events, you have to make an effort to come in and do one. And it's just incumbent upon you as a professional EMS person to get to one. Even if it's a local event in your community, start wherever you can. It's a great place to network, great way to learn, and a great way to do something to improve yourself as a medical person. Also want to thank our studio sponsors today. Medtronic Foundation is sponsoring us along with their Heart Rescue Project. And we're going to go ahead moving forward here and thank our very special episode sponsor too. You know, Bariatrics was one of our product innovators at a recent show because of just coming up with a great way to solve a problem. And I love it when EMS providers themselves come up with a solution that we can use in the ambulance. So I'm really happy to be joined by Bruce Latourelle. Is that correct? I'm terrible with pronunciation. I can't even pronounce my own name half the time. So, and also, just quickly, we have Jim Huffman and Ann Robinson joining us for this discussion. And you don't have to worry about the lower thirds on that, Ron. We'll get them later when they start talking for real. But Bruce, let's talk a little bit about this. First of all, thank you very much for sponsoring the MedicCast and coming in and helping us out with the show here. But your device is so creative, and yet it's also a device that maybe some people are not sure that they what they would do with it and how they would use it. So can you explain a little bit about Bariatrics?
Sure. The way I start is I go over a definition of what is a bariatric patient. A lot of people think 700 pounds, 600 pounds, 1,000 pounds. In reality, any patient that is too big for your current equipment is a bariatric patient. A 250-pound patient, which might seem normal to most services, could be a bariatric patient if they're very short, only 3 feet high. They would be much wider than a regular patient and be taxing on any type of equipment you could put them on, backboard or stretcher. That's where our device comes in. We thought, how can we help these patients where you do not need a bariatric truck, you do not need a bariatric stretcher, your current stretcher, behind me I have a Furno model that holds 700 pounds, you need to fit up to a 700-pound patient on that device. Our device allows that to happen.
And explain a little bit about that, because it's really not about weight for most bariatric patients. It's about width.
Exactly.
And they hang over the device, and they make it unsafe to actually operate, and they feel unsafe.
Yes. The large abdominal mass. You've seen the patients where, you know, skinny arms, skinny legs, but just a large abdominal mass. You get them on a backboard or a stretcher. You find that they're listing one side or another. That abdominal mass, when they're laying down, is now free-floating, not being held down by gravity, other than wanting to go left and right. With those shiftings and the stretcher being at the highest position, you can throw that off balance and tip it over.
And so just a simple device to pull that mass up to a center of gravity and hold it in place, not only does it make them less wide and fit on normal stretcher, but also enables them to feel more secure themselves when they're, you know, it's frightening. They let somebody else give over trust, let somebody else carry you in that situation.
I've heard time and time again from the larger population that we've taken saying, last time I was on an ambulance, I felt like I was falling. I didn't feel safe. I had a lot of anxiety. With your device on, I feel safer. I don't feel like I'm going left or right. And their blood pressure and pulse is reflective of that. It's actually lowered in studies that we've seen where less anxiety, patients more comfortable, it reflects in their vital signs.
Just a little more feeling, a little more secure. I know, Ann, you picked this device for us as your innovation sponsor or innovations product choice at the last event. What was it that drew you when you looked at this device?
Well, with the increase in the obesity in our population, I think it's important that we find ways to be able to meet the need of our patients. And this was just very creative, and it's taking care of a population that there aren't a lot of devices for to be able to accommodate. And
that's the best thing about our device. It can be used immediately. It takes less than a minute to put on. It takes less than 10 minutes to be trained on via video. You can keep it in your truck for the off chance that you need it. You can turn an entire fleet of vehicles into a bariatric fleet.
And that's true. I mean, how many, when you look at bariatric numbers, you've looked into this, I'm sure, for your business purposes. How many patients are actually too large for a standard cot and need to be actually transported on a bariatric-specific device in a unit made for that?
What we did is we looked at bariatric transfers, and we've looked at services that transfer with a specialty bariatric truck and stretcher. We found, depending on the service, between 60 and 90% of their patients could be accommodated on a stretcher that would hold 700 pounds, not requiring that stretcher that lifts up to 1,500 pounds.
So
if you look at 60 to 90%, that's a large amount of resources.
And in most cases, I know in my system, we have a bariatric device, a bariatric stretcher. You have to send an ambulance. You have to leave a stretcher in a station, send an ambulance to go get it while you've got an ambulance on the scene. They drive halfway across the county. They pick up the device. We've timed it to our district. It's usually about a 40-minute round trip while you're on the scene waiting for the device to arrive. It's not a way to treat a critical patient.
It's very easy, even during a regular transfer, to have miscommunication. You go to a transfer that's an hour away for a 200-pound patient, and when you get there, it's 200 kilograms. It's easy to misinterpret the pounds and kilograms on a chart, and when you get there, you have a device now that is ready immediately. You don't have to pass the call, reorganize and reschedule the entire transfer, the doctor's appointment, whatever was going on with the patient with that day. It makes a huge impact.
About it is you can fold it up and it doesn't take up much room to store it in the ambulance. It's not, we're not needing a whole different stretcher or even a different vehicle. It's all just right there.
Yeah, and Jim, you and I were talking about that earlier about, you know, really, they say, well, look, it'll fit in this empty ambulance over here.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever seen an empty ambulance in the field? I mean, they're packed to the gills. There isn't a whole lot of free space. Often when you buy a new tool or new device, it's really, what am I going to take off? Because I've got to now make room for this.
It's 8 inches by 24 inches by maybe 4 inches thick. And you can roll it up. You can fold it in half. You can fold it into fours if you got the time. Fits under the bench. Fits behind the driver's seat. Fits under the driver's seat.
Yeah.
You can put it underneath the head end of the stretcher and have it with you at all times if you'd like.
So it really is very versatile and small and easy to transport. Well, Bruce, you know, again, thank you. It's bariatrics, and it's spelled with the animal
the
bear instead of B-A-R. It's B-E-A-R. And then iatrics.com.
And like everything, we're very proud to say it's made in America, and we're planning to keep it that way.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's my biggest thing is it's two EMS professionals that have come up with a way to make our transport simpler, but also to improve patient care, not just medical care, but their own sense of well-being and their safety, which is an important part of that patient's well-being.
The bariatric patient does deserve the golden hour.
Mm-hmm. They really do. Bruce, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Thanks again for sponsoring the Medicast. And we're going to continue our discussion talking here a little bit about more about bariatric patients. So I got another guest coming up.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Okay. And we're going to move a couple people out, and we're going to go over here. Jim, I'm going to just chat with you real quick. You're in a different system. You're up in New York. And what are you guys doing to handle bariatric patients?
Well, we have, talking about space, we have wings that attach to each side of the stretcher. And that allows for that width of the patient to rest on the stretcher. But then you've got the issue of you're losing those inches on either side of the patient for patient care to get to the patient. And something like this makes it much easier because now you don't lose that, because those wings are about maybe 6-9 inches wider than what the normal stretcher would be. And then, of course, the space issue. You know, that goes where the longboard would go, where the scoop stretcher goes, things like that, and that takes up that space inside of the ambulance. Whereas this, again, he mentioned, fold it up, and it's much easier. So definitely something I would rather use than trying to attach it with these attachments, you know, to the stretcher.
And like Bruce said, you know, the bariatric patients are no different in the way that they deserve rapid transport and treatment of their problem.
Absolutely.
And so if you have waiting for a secondary device is, if you don't have to, is really not good patient care.
Absolutely.
Well, we're joined now by some more guests. And first of all, I have to apologize to Tom Boothelet. I think I must have forgotten to tell you that I would like to have you on the Medicast. I just pulled my mic off. We're going to edit this part out when we do the final show.
That's my joke.
No. We're going to fix it in post. Is that all right, Bernie? He's loving me.
Pen too.
No, it's my pen. But Tom, thanks for coming running when I said, I don't know where Tom is. I thought I'd...
So, well, you're lucky you have Carissa around here, Jamie.
I owe you a drink later. And I
say that as a joke because we were calling Ann your mom before, and so now I'm changing it to Carissa. But you've got two very strong-willed women working for you, keeping you on time. Keep the trains running on time. So.
And Tom and I are actually collaborating now on the EMS 12 Lead podcast,
which
is exciting. Episode 1's out, and we're going to be releasing episode 2 here in hopefully a couple of weeks.
Hopefully. Yeah.
And start moving into a more regular schedule after that.
Absolutely.
Very exciting. But thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
We also have Wes Ogilvy. Wes, you're a paramedic in Harris County in Texas.
Yes.
And the reason we wanted to bring you on was your agency just bought a bariatric unit, bariatric stretcher?
We've had a bariatric stretcher for a while that we keep at headquarters, and I found out from our director, who is somewhere wandering the floor today, that we just ordered a new bariatric unit as well.
What has been, you said, you and I were talking earlier, talking about you had a frequent flyer bariatric patient that
we still have her
and still have her, and that's good. It means you're doing your job. So far, successful. What's been one of the biggest challenges with that patient, even during having access to bariatric equipment?
The biggest challenges, I think, are getting enough resources over to move her properly. Usually, my experience with her, it's usually been primary medic unit, send a second unit to go get the bariatric stretcher from our headquarters facility, and at least one fire engine. The next challenge that we've really faced with her a lot of times is prepping the ER for her. Letting the ER know that she's not probably going to fit on an ER bed. The time I transport her, we had to call ahead to the hospital, warn them we were coming, and they had to bring down a bariatric bed from the floor to the ER.
Yeah, and that's... You know, that's something that, from my nursing side, we have hospitals usually have one bed around, and then they have to call to the agency to deliver more beds if they need them. But how big is this patient?
Approximately, probably a little bit over 750.
So too big for this, the application from our sponsors, but certainly still needing regular care and regular access to care.
Right.
So... When you look at that, I don't know the rest of you dealing with bariatric patients in your system, Tom. You guys have a system for everything, it seems like, and bariatric patients, I'm sure, are no different. What have you been doing to date to try to take care of this patient population?
We actually had a very complicated patient who has subsequently passed away that we went to very frequently, and I'm not exactly sure how much this gentleman weighs. When he found out the weight limits of our stretcher, he always said he was 500 pounds. But I had heard from the hospital that, and the other thing that I wanted to mention is preserving the patient's dignity, even though they happen to be obese, is important. And there's a lot of things that we can do that are very impolite or inconsiderate. For example, I think they took this patient at one time down to like the loading dock to weigh them in some kind of like scale, right? And it's just like, well, my, you know, what, you didn't want to take them down to SeaWorld to weigh them, you know? It's like in front of a bunch of people, right?
That's like a Twitter post.
Well, you know, the point being, you know, think about, it might be convenient for you to try and get a weight on the patient, but there's something about it just seemed a little odd to me or possibly embarrassing for the patient. And we make so many efforts when we're out, doing a 12-lead ECG on a female patient and holding up a sheet or something like that to help preserve their dignity. But I think that's just one of those things where we need to remember that these are human beings. They have feelings. We can be considerate in how we approach.
The frustration level I think people get with the bariatric patients where it's costing a lot of resources to get them into the ambulance, off of the floor, to the hospital. Like you said, you have to call. You're already predetermined what you're going to need for that patient, and then you start, people start getting that being insensitive,
right.
You know, instead of thinking about, you know, their comfort and their, you know, their privacy as well, so.
Well, we have many frustrating situations in EMS. We have the, you know, someone calls with knee pain at 3 a.m, for example, or something like that.
So, hurts now.
My knee hurts now. Did you guys see one of the best video ever? But I digress, but so anyway, this gentleman has subsequently passed away. I remember that when he had his gastric bypass, that they had to put two hospital beds side by side to accommodate him in the OR. And he did lose a lot of weight, but he was still very, very obese and very difficult to take care of. And so I can't say that we have a system. I will say this for my fire department, we threw a lot of resources at it. And so from my standpoint, patient safety is first. We want to make sure we transfer these people in a manner that is safe for them and try the best we can to preserve their dignity. But preventing injury, I would say, is a close second. We don't want to do things. And frankly, we might overestimate our abilities. Right. Trying to transfer these patients to normal equipment might break.
Bariatric patients are not the time to display how macho you are, because it is difficult. You know, I have a story I tell quite a bit, and it's quite shocking. I was at an event 5 years ago or so, talking to a company that was displaying a lift device, an airbag-based lift device that you could roll under a patient and then lift them up to stretch your height, just with an inflating device. And he was trying to show it to a couple people walking by, and one of them was, and I won't even say the system because I don't want to embarrass them, but let's just say a deputy chief for EMS in a major metropolitan top 20 television market in the country, so big city. And when he said, he took one look at it and he said, "That's what probies are for." You know? And I'd been talking to the guy, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and just was astounded that this person even said something like that. It is about making sure we're safe as well.
Right.
One thing I wanted to throw in, especially with the patient that we deal with, is in addition to the bariatrics, they usually have other health issues going on, and that's a real challenge when you have someone who, for example, is that size and has a trach and a home ventilator. It becomes a triple challenge to manage not just the weight, but their additional healthcare needs. And with her, because of that vent, we've got a limited amount of time we can keep her on the battery power on her vent before moving her between the home and the unit.
Jim, you're an educator, and you're really, do you see that there needs to be more? Do we need to talk more about bariatric patients, even educating our brand new EMTs and medics?
I think it should be a bigger part of the overall education process, because the population, I think, is growing of bariatric patients. We're getting more and more of them, not even beyond the transport act of it. I mean, there are so many instances of just lifting assistance, of getting these people. Sometimes they slip and fall, or they can't get out of the situation they got themselves into. And that puts, we're not really doing really patient care at that point, but we need to lift them, we need to get them off and get them where they need to be. And that puts us at a risk. And I think that, you know, the students out there need to have a bigger concentration on how to deal with patients like that. Not just all different types of situations that we don't run across all that often. It kind of glanced over, I think, in a lot of training.
Tom, is there a specific change or way that we need to look at something like even a 12 lead with a patient that has a large girth? Does it change the way that monitor reads with that patient, or how we place our leads?
Well, sure. I mean, 12 lead electrode placement is pretty appalling anyway across not just EMS but even nursing and I guess most physicians don't
yeah.
don't lower themselves to place electrodes.
Anybody out there actually ever seen a physician do a 12 lead?
No.
Please let me know.
But I think if you just follow the simple principles of their sternum is going to be pretty close to the same size, but you do the best you can. There's going to definitely be some challenges with bariatric patients. You just got to make sure that you get the V6 electrode right there in the center, and then just kind of split the difference between V4 and V6.
I find it harder with larger patients, putting the limb leads on limbs.
like the reading doesn't seem to be as clear.
Well, I mean, there's definitely going to be,
because you've got a longer.
It's going to be a smaller signal.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
There is insulation in the way. There's something blocking the signal. Just right. If nothing else, but just distance from the core tissues.
Yep. Adjusting the leads a few times, so I get a good reading for those patients.
And that's an important lesson with any patient. You know, we are all trained to treat the anatomically correct patient, but everybody's a little different, and you've got to be willing to move your leads around if it doesn't look right and it's not matching up with what you have. You have to be a little bit of a detective and do some placement adjustment. That goes without saying, and I think that's something we don't do enough of.
Just getting a blood pressure is extremely difficult. I think we ended up putting a thigh cuff on this gentleman's forearm. Some numbers came out. Whether or not they were accurate, who knows?
Well, but you can still trend.
True.
And let's add vascular access to that.
Yeah.
It's difficult to get a catheter through that tissue.
Mm-hmm.
That much.
Let alone to spot and actually find the vein, and then to have. Even in critical care situations, they may not be accessible even by an IO gun because of the distance between the tissue and the bone. So it's a lot of different challenges to face out there. And I think, we don't really train enough to treat the unusual patients. And so it's incumbent upon all of us to really reach out for the resources. Wes? Anything that you have done to really educate yourself better about your patients, and when you have this regular patient, have you reached out to try to really examine what you can do to change the way you approach this patient?
Are you talking immediate or long term?
Well, long term. I mean, you know, you're going to see this person again.
Our management has taken some steps about making sure that she's transported to the appropriate facility, about trying to find some alternative care sources for her. We've worked with some of the social services entities. Unfortunately, with any of our patients, I guess poor health habits are what keeps us in business, but the patient has to want to get receive some of that help too for it to work.
Right.
And we face that challenge, and I will not say that we're withholding anything.
Right.
But it does cause us to reevaluate which direction we're going to approach the care.
And you do have to, I mean, it's almost like a mass casualty incident, because you have to approach each patient individually, and a bariatric patient's, you know, the actual weight of what is a bariatric patient's, at least as far as lifting goes, really can change depending on the situation. You have to say, what resources do I have available, and when do I need additional resources? You need to know that, and it's not just about too many patients. It might be about too much patient, and not try to make do before you've tried to exhaust some other avenues of assistance.
I think a lot of times what happens is that a lot of places just want to try to make do with those situations rather than preparing for it ahead of time, by having equipment, by having vehicles, proper vehicles to transport, things like that, in order to go ahead and get proper care for the patient. And I think you mentioned too that there's so many other medical issues going on a lot of times with these patients that becomes an additional challenge beyond just getting them into the ambulance and out of their home and into the ambulance, or getting to the hospital and having the hospital dealing with their end of it.
You know, and I'm even thinking protocols. Do you need to change your drug dosages? Do you need to change your drug doses? Is there more that patient?
There's been a lot of debate about that, because the adipose tissue doesn't react the same way, so it's not
airway
the same type of
airway management. Their airways positioned differently. CPR. You know, are you going to be able to get good chest compressions on someone who's 750 pounds?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
And that's just the fact of both. You know, even the mechanical devices out there at a certain point can't be placed on a certain size patient, and certainly you can't. I mean, it's about your body mass versus their body mass. If you can't compress that chest wall adequately, you're not going to perform an adequate compression. That's something to think about, though, and keep in mind, because it's about compressing that chest effectively and monitoring. Again, we come back to adjusting the leads. We have to adjust how we approach something like CPR per patient to say, all right, if we're not getting effective compressions, there are ways to monitor that. We can feel for a pulse. We can monitor on our devices and say, are we getting better exchange via capnography, for instance? We can watch those numbers and adjust our compressions appropriately, even with a bariatric patient, to if we can't do perfect compressions, and we can do better than we're doing.
I think we'd be really guessing about the appropriate shock dosing as well, frankly. I mean, this has been studied. I don't think we have any idea. I've heard some studies on the one hand that say that physical size doesn't affect impedance,
right,
which seems counterintuitive. How could it not?
But it doesn't affect their tracings.
Yeah, right, right.
The electricity going the other way is having a
right.
problem, so I'm not sure. But you're right, and it doesn't mean that we violate protocol or guidelines at all to change our shock dosage, but it is something to keep in mind, and it is, I guess, something you can certainly have an open discussion with your medical director and say, what do you think?
especially now that there's EMS systems that are doing the double defibrillation and doubling the 360 to 720 for refractory VFib. And there's some evidence that actually is conferring some benefit. So,
work within your own system to do it appropriately, but there may have to be changes that are made. And that's where we have, we have that radio, that cell phone that can make that call. We need to use online medical control as something other than, simply something that we mother may I, but have a bit of a medical caregiving discussion about this patient is extremely large. We're not responding to the shock dosage we're giving him. We would like to give them a larger dose shock that's outside of protocol. Do you concur?
Well,
you'd have to do more paperwork, but it may save your patient.
Well, just like the fire department, I know, Tom, you're a firefighter as well. The fire department does a good job of pre-planning for structure fires. These are probably patients that, since we know they're out there, we may have to do a little bit of pre-planning. When we, if you see that address pop up when they dispatch you, think about what additional resources you're going to need from the minute the page goes out.
Absolutely. I did want to say I got a message in. You see me talking off stage. It's because Ann's keeping me straight. But Bruce did want to say that our sponsor, Bariatrics, just wanted to point out that while the stretcher is a 700-pound stretcher, their device does handle up to 1,500 pounds. It's rated for that much weight. So it can be used on larger stretchers as well. And, again, it comes back to using the right tools for the right job. If you have a patient and you can secure them more safely for both them and for you, it's incumbent to use the correct device to do that. We're gonna start winding down a little bit here, but I do want to wrap up with a couple of thoughts. We have a couple of different groups of patients that we transport infrequently: pediatric patients, bariatric patients, maternity, labor and delivery patients. I'm just going to ask each of you to kind of give me your thoughts, but we'll start with you, Wes. What are your thoughts about you as a paramedic? What's your job to maintain your skills and your knowledge with regard to those patients? Because I think a lot of people, wait for the next PEP class to come along for pediatric patients and wait for the next time they have to do their protocol or their recert to do labor and delivery again. What is our responsibility there? What do you see that?
Theoretically speaking, at least, as a professional, you do continuing education. You should probably be going above and beyond, although I will say Texas has pretty heavy continuing education requirements. But, seek out the continuing education for the things you're weak in. I won't say any monkey can manage trauma, but there is some truth to that. You probably don't need a heck of a lot of courses on bleeding control, to put white stuff on red stuff. Going out and finding the opportunities, and not just even continuing education, but just talking to people who know about it. If you don't know cardiology as well as you'd like, to go to Tom's website.
It's true. There are a lot of resources out there, and that brings it around to Tom. I mean, you run the EMS12lead.com site. One of the best resources out there, I think, for cardiology in general in the EMS sector. But, there are other tools out there. What are other tools you use to manage those infrequently transported patients?
Well, I don't think anyone relishes a life-threatening emergency in a child, but at least we have specialties like, there are emergency physicians that specialize in pediatrics, and there are pediatric emergency departments. We carry pediatric advanced life support cards, and there's a big field of knowledge there that any interested paramedic or nurse or physician that wants to learn can. I'm not sure how much high-quality information there is out there about the field of bariatrics, at least in the realm of emergency medicine. So just like I always say, it's good that a individual paramedic is prepared for a cardiac arrest or a STEMI or anything else. It is a system, an EMS system, that takes care of a patient. And yep. And so I feel it could be any field. It could be EMS, it could be manufacturing. The people have to give the tools to the people doing the job and the right tool for the right job. And if you enable people like that and at least give them the tools that they need to do the job, you're going to have an employee that has a much higher satisfaction. And when they have a higher satisfaction, they deliver patient care in a more compassionate and expert manner. And so I would suggest that it probably is, now that there are bariatric ambulances and things like that, I think all communities that can afford to should really look at their fleet and their equipment and their cots and think about enabling the people out there in the field to be able to do the job and minimize their risk of injury.
It's not about buying the equipment. You've got to have the training. You got to accompany that equipment with the training to treat the patients that you're going to use that equipment for.
This is true.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, you get the last word. And I just want to say it's great to finally have you on the show in person. Jim Huffman, EMS Office Hours host, and just a great educational resource yourself. What do you think about when you think about what needs to be out there for educational resources for specialty patients?
I mean, I think training is the key, I think, for a lot of what we deal with. And as providers, when we're done with our basic training, as far as whether you're an EMT or paramedic or whatever, you have to go beyond that. And if you can't find official courses that provide that training for you, you need to take the initiative, I think, and seek out websites like yours and pediatric websites that are out there that are dedicated to this field. Like you mentioned, that has all of the information there. Seek them out and learn from it. Self-study, more or less. Self-study, and don't work outside your protocol, of course, by doing that, but inform yourself and be prepared and try to even pass that knowledge on to maybe your supervisor and what you can be doing better for that patient population, whether it's pediatric or bariatric or even OBGYN. So I think training is the biggest key, I feel, and I think that making that initiative is a big key, I think, to getting that knowledge, building your knowledge base.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for coming on, and Wes, thanks for stepping up at the last minute and coming on to add your 2 cents worth. I think it's important to really have people that are using the devices in the field to be able to talk about how we can do things better. So thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you.
And Tom, thanks for being chased down and and for my oversight for contacting you sooner and letting you know that I was hoping you'd be on today.
Always a pleasure.
And Jim, we're going to have you back tomorrow to be on with Greg on the EMS Educast.
At 10 o'clock, I think.
That'll be great. And I just want to wrap up and say we're here at EMS World Expo 2011. We're going to be talking some more tomorrow here as we have people come in and you can do the live stream. You can also participate via our social media lounge. I want to thank the folks over there for putting that together. Our podcast studio sponsor today has been the Medtronic Foundation and the Heart Rescue Project. You know, I want to tell you, there's a great program out there to follow the Heart Rescue Project. You really can take a look at what some individual organizations are doing to improve cardiac arrest survival and cardiac care in their communities in different multitude of different ways. And so I would urge you to take a look at what they're doing there, and we'll have links in the show notes for that as well. Finally, I want to say our episode sponsors, really special thanks to Bruce for coming on from Bariatrics, and my friend Keith, who is hiding in the background there somewhere. Keith is Bruce's partner. Just a great tool. I would urge you to check out bariatrics.com. Spell the first part like bear the animal, and then the rest is the same. Bariatrics.com is a great place to check out a tool that you should have on every ambulance. I got to say, You know, you can't have a bariatric stretcher on every ambulance, but you can have a bariatrics device like this on every ambulance. And we appreciate their support of the Medicast. Finally, just to find out more at medicast.com/blog. You can also reach me directly, podmedic@mac.com. And want to follow up on the show notes and the links to everything we talked about in this episode. Thanks to all our guests. And again, get out to EMS World Expo. If you're not around this year, you definitely want to make an effort to get to next year's show at EMS World Expo. And we'll be back again soon with some more live podcasting here from the podcast studio.